morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We are here till 5 a.m. It is Monday, and that means my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. And we are going to talk about 10 things that you didn't know actually had a name. They actually did have a name. And also, we're going to talk about movie theater etiquette as well. And more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. As I mentioned, it is Monday morning, and that means every Monday morning we do Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday to talk movies. And then Eric sticks around and we talk about the box office for the weekend as well. That's all coming up right now. So let's welcome Eric first. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. So before we get started, happy birthday. Yesterday was your birthday, Colin. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I saw you posted on your Facebook page that you, over the weekend, you got to see one of your favorite Scorsese movie on the big screen for the first time.
Yeah, After Hours from 1985, one of his few comedies that he did. I remember seeing this movie for the first time in 1986 on video and quickly became pretty obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It was like the first movie where I noticed like cinematography, sound, editing, you know, the kind of use of music that I'd never seen before. And a screenplay that I'd never seen a movie quite like it. And so, yeah, to see it on the big screen, 35mm, with an audience, it's a totally different experience and a really beautiful one.
Yeah. And you had never seen it on the big screen, huh?
Never have, no.
Wow.
You know, I just wasn't old enough in 1985 to get in to see it, and it wasn't around very long.
No, it wasn't.
So.
No, it wasn't around very long. And I remember I saw it in the screening room sitting between Roy Leonard and Dave Kerr, and we were just, all of us were like, oh, my God. It's such a great movie. It's funny that, you know, you... that, like, you know, After Hours probably, you know, it sounds to me as though it was like one of the first movies that you saw where you kind of realized what a director did.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Yeah, it's funny because I screened Halloween
right.
last Tuesday, and that's the movie that did it for me. I mean, I was just like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And by the way, that the 4K restoration that I showed Tuesday night of Halloween was breathtaking.
I wish I could have been there.
Dean Cundey went back and he supervised the print.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a 15-minute interview with Carpenter beforehand.
Oh, very cool.
It was outstanding. And it was like a retrospective of, you know, his movies leading up to Halloween and then the success of Halloween. And then that's where it stopped. It didn't go any further. But it was like, you know, present day Carpenter. I think the interview was done in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. And it was, you know, it was cantankerous, foul-mouthed Carpenter. And it was great. I got to tell you guys, we had a huge house for Halloween. I didn't expect it to be that crowded, but it was packed. And there were actually people who'd never seen it before, which I don't know why I find that hard to believe. Seriously. Like,
it's
Eric.
It's more fun, though. You know, it's always, it's always fun to, like, see a movie like that.
Yeah.
People have never seen it before.
And that movie. Seriously, in a packed house, come on, man. I mean, and even to this day, my mom was freaking out, and she's seen it like 800 times. And so, you know, I was asking the audience, like, how many people have never seen it? So people put their hands up, and one kid put his hand up, and I go, well, how old are you? And he goes, I'm 10, and his dad was sitting next to him, and I said, you, my friend, are a good parent.
Yeah.
And then I asked people who've never seen it on the big screen, and it was more than three-quarters of the house. Raise their hand.
Yeah, so, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're going to be talking about a movie tonight that I am, you know, I probably shouldn't be, but I'm surprised that more people haven't seen the original movie.
Well, yeah. 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 So, anyway, happy birthday, Colin. I'm glad you got
Thank
to see
you.
It. I mean, After Hours is such a great movie, and to see it on the big screen, 35. Was it a big crowd?
Yeah, I mean, it was a you know, Sunday night at the Music Box. It was part of their Is It Still Funny series.
Oh, so Mark hosted
Arrow.
It. Yeah, Mark, yeah.
Yeah, but those are always fun. And
yeah.
It was a good discussion afterwards. It was a lot of fun.
Okay.
The crowd was into it.
Very cool. Very, very cool. All right, well, let's get to some modern-day motion pictures. shall we? Eric, let's start with The Mountain Between Us.
Okay. Well, this film stars Idris Elba and Kate Winslet as two people who really need to get onto a plane. Idris Elba is a doctor who has a patient that is waiting for him to do some life-saving surgery, and Kate Winslet is going to be married this weekend. All the planes are pretty much shut down, canceled, where they're at. So they charter a private plane piloted by Bo Bridges. And so they get aboard the plane. It's Bo and them and Bo's dog. I'm just going to call him Bo. And, well, they crash into the mountains or a mountain. And Idris and Kate's characters and the dog survive. Kate's character is laid up with a wounded leg. Thankfully, there's a doctor there. And as he is a little bit cautious on exactly, how far he should venture out to possibly look for help, considering they got no cell phone access, she is, continually pushing him to, explore a little further to save their hides. Well, eventually they trek out together and make it through the snowy winterland of the mountains and do their best to survive. And, well, extreme situations put people a little bit closer together. Who knows how that marriage is going to work out with Kate and the husband. Anyway, so that's the basic story.
All right, cool. Hang on, Eric.
Yeah.
And then we'll find out what Eric thinks of the movie and what I thought of the movie as well after we take this break for the news. It's coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Okay, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. And we do the Monday morning movie reviews, which we are in the middle of right now. Also, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about movie etiquette and 10 things that you probably didn't know actually had a name, that you can call them something. And that's coming up as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the break, before the news, Eric Childress was telling us about the plot for The Mountain Between Us. And welcome back, Eric. Welcome back, Colin.
Thank you.
Hey.
All right. So, Eric, you told us what it was about. What did you think of the movie?
Well, I have for a long time been a big fan of stories about survival. I mean, survival films and stories of this type are kind of their own subgenre. I remember even reading like Jack London books that we had around the house. So this is just a thing that I'm fascinated with, particularly as a suburban kid, grew up with, not really a need to struggle for my existence.
Yeah.
Watching stories like this where people are sort of pushed to extremes in order to how far they're going to go to survive is always really interesting, especially when, they have to do like, self-motivated MacGyver techniques to get themselves through it. In fact, there's a film, I'm not sure if it's on VOD right now, called Walking Out with Matt Bomer that played at Sundance this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a survival story that I recommend very highly. The Mountain Between Us is one that I do not at all. And a big reason why is that at no point during this film did I feel any tension whatsoever that they were not going to get off that mountain. I mean, it's the two of them and the dog. And for a good portion of the movie, I had a larger rooting interest in the dog. The two characters are pretty much defined as they are. You have the doctor and the photographer, and that's pretty much all they're really described, throughout this whole ordeal. There is not really another trait to give either of these characters to make them interesting as individuals and certainly even less interesting as a couple. Even when they sort of face, one of the greater challenges early on with a cougar, even that situation is dispatched pretty easily. This is pretty much maybe the easiest survival tale I've ever seen on the big screen. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, when we find out, you know, so kind of the aftermath of this ordeal, and there's kind of a epilogue tacked onto this thing, as, again, I don't want to spoil too much, but I remember when the reveal of who Kate Winslet's fiance is, if they couldn't come up with the more vanilla, obvious, laughable choice as the third, you know, the third wheel, you know, between Idris Elba and this guy, I mean, it provokes so many unintended laughs every time this poor schmuck appears on screen. And I didn't buy anything throughout this movie, and the epilogue is just sort of the cherry on the just shrugged shoulders of, you know, why was I sitting through this movie? I really didn't like it at all.
Wow, I liked it more than you did. I don't think it's great, but I thought that the strength of the two actors, not necessarily the characters, because you're right, it's not, you know, they're not the most significantly written characters. But I could watch Idris Elba and Kate Winslet, you know, read the phone book, and I'd be entertained. I thought I actually thought this was a pretty good survival movie. You know, I mean, it's not The Revenant, you know, but and it's not The Grey. It's not in, you know, it's not on that level at all.
No,
not at all. But I thought some of the situations were suspenseful. I thought it was well edited and kind of well filmed. I agree with you about the epilogue, which is, you know, as you said, pretty ridiculous. But I think this movie is carried on. I think it's a pretty well made film. I think the suspense is there. I think some of the stuff that they have to do in order to survive is painful to watch. And some of the things that Kate Winslet ends up doing are scary, and like I said, I like the two of them a lot. I'm not necessarily thrilled with the fact that they ended up, you know, becoming a couple. I think that's they could have not gone down that route and just had it be about two people, you know, counting on each other to survive instead of throwing in, you know, but you've got Idris. If you're stranded with Idris Elba and you're a woman, you're going to want to make out with him. That's pretty much all there is to it. So that's it.
I guess I know everyone is just, you know, head over heels for this guy.
Listen,
and everything,
Eric, the women love Stringer
that's
Bell.
Wonderful. I'm not a woman. I don't care.
They love the Stringer Bell, man. That's all there is to it.
Great.
So anyway, it didn't need to go down that road. And again, it's not a perfect movie. I'm recommending it because I think that there is enough good stuff in it, and I really, really like both leads a lot, and I thought it was well made and had some really nice suspenseful and scary moments. So it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. If you miss it, you miss it. It's no big deal, but I didn't think it was that bad. So, all right, Colin.
Yeah.
Tell us about Lucky.
All right. Well, this is among Harry Dean Stanton's last performances, and it was actually written for him, and it's perfect for him. He plays a 91-year-old atheist living in the deserts of New Mexico. And his name is Lucky, and we basically follow him through his routine. You know, he wakes up, you know, how he wakes up, where he goes during the day, who he talks to. One of his friends is played by David Lynch, who is in total agony over his missing tortoise. Not a turtle, but a tortoise.
Right.
Very important that you get that right if you're going to be in his presence. Tortoise, who goes by the name of Theodore Roosevelt. Lucky goes to the doctor, played by Ed Begley Jr. That's one day. Another day, he runs into a World War II veteran, a fellow World War II veteran, played by Tom Skerritt, and that provides him with some unexpected company. And there are a lot of discussions between these characters about death and loneliness and friendship. And it's all centered around this character who kind of lives for his routine and feels he has little use for anything else. But the people he comes in contact with tend to feel differently.
So this is, you know, we've talked about this movie before. It played at our film festival. It won the Audience Award at our film festival back in May, which is when I last saw it. So I'm kind of going on memory of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, me too. I didn't get to see it again, so.
Yeah, so, and it's there's a reason why it won the Audience Award, because it's a movie that is just resonates with a lot of people who watch it. These characters who are on the screen, not just Harry Dean Stanton, but all of them are, you know, connected in a way that is very moving. And the discussions that they have are ones that we sometimes kind of wish we could have in real life, but we don't often get to. And, you know, it's loaded with people who are very much alive, even if they are, you know, 91 and atheists and living in the desert. They are, you know, these are characters who, you know, have a really strong life force. And it's a really funny movie. It's I remember laughing a lot during this film while also just being, you know, it was kind of, you know, just laughing through the tears. David Lynch has a monologue in this movie that is the monologue of the year, in my opinion, so far, just about what this tortoise means to him. And it is just funny and sad and adorable, and my heart went out to him so much. And Harry Dean Stanton, I mean, you know, what can we say that hasn't been said already in the last few weeks? What a great career capper. I don't care if there's one more movie in his arsenal. This is the one that we're all going to think about as the end of a very distinguished and beautiful career and a beautiful life. There's a just a tremendous life-affirming spirit at the center of this thing, and it's directed by John Carroll Lynch, one of our other great character actors. And man, what a debut! I can't wait to see what he does next as a director, because there's definitely, you know, the announcement of a real talent behind the camera here, and you know, also, I mean, the screenwriters do you know, clearly have a real affection for Harry Dean Stanton and really know the guy and really just gave him just a gift and gave all of us a gift, really. I can't recommend this movie highly enough. This is definitely the one people should check out. You know, it's October, we're in award season. A lot of more great movies are coming out and people should not let this one get away. It's only playing at the Music Box right now. And I hope it expands soon. I hope it survives into the award race. And, you know, people are still talking about it in January and February, because it deserves to be a serious part of that discussion. And not just for superficial awards, but just for the great films that were released this year. This is a really tremendous and humble and unassuming little masterpiece that came out. So people should definitely check it out.
All right. Colin, hang on. Eric, hang on, okay? We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get Eric's thoughts on Lucky and my thoughts on Lucky. And we'll take a quick break here on 720 and WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? It's Monday morning, and that means the Monday morning movie reviews, and that's what we're doing right now. All right, Eric, tell us what you thought of Lucky. It's not like we haven't talked about this movie before, but...
Well, I'm going to say, I think that this film might actually break the record of the most times we've ever talked about a movie, and the year ain't over.
Yeah.
We'll just say that, too.
Yeah.
We talked about it when it premiered at South by Southwest, and I saw it. Then we talked about it before our festival. Then you got to see it at the festival. We talked about it then, and now we're talking about it now.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to be talking about it for a long time after this year is up as well. Because, you know, that's, you know, the way Colin was, you know, talking about it there at the end, you know, now we're in the sort of the unfortunate position of talking about this movie after Harry Dean's passing, when this film takes on an even more significant resonance than it did before. I mean, before it was, you know, however you wanted to view it as, you know, a potential, you know, one of the last, you know, big roles of Harry Dean's career. Now it obviously, you know, turns out that way. You know, but this is a film that we're going to be remembering, I think, for a while. I mean, you know, this isn't one of these films where some old guy, you know, maybe famous, maybe not, maybe playing themselves, maybe not, goes to the doctor, finds out that they're dying, and then either needs to change their life before the end or, you know, make amends before the end. This is a guy that finds out he's dying just because he's old. he's just old, as his doctor so dutifully, you know, puts it. And he's not about to change anything. He has a routine, and he's going to stick to the routine. But he's a little more open to the possibilities. He's a little more open to other points of view and, you know, talking to, you know, whether it be a new generation like Ron Livingston's character, who is selling insurance in this film, who seems like he'd be like the sort of the stereotypical adversary. But then a second conversation reveals the sort of the common ground that these two men have, which is, you know, another really beautiful scene. You know, as great as those scenes in the bar are with David Lynch, the scene with between him and Tom Skerritt pretty much just froze me in my chair the first time I saw it. And I would even rival that whole scene. You know, this is a really special film. I don't care what age you are, how close you, you know, how far away from the end you might think you are, how close you might be, whatever you believe. This is a film that doesn't disparage points of view. It doesn't, you know, if you, whether you believe in God or don't believe in God, this is a movie that is for everyone, because the one thing we definitely share is death. And the way this movie approaches it, and the sensitivity that it takes to it, and the humor that it takes to as well, is the kind of, you know, the kind of thing that makes for lasting cinema, and lasting, and your movies about, you know, that have spark conversations afterwards. And then of course you got Harry Dean Stanton at the center of it, giving I think unquestionably one of the great performances of the year, you know. Arguably, you know, one of the best performances of his, not arguably, one of the best performances of his career. And it's, if you get a chance to see it at the Music Box, please go out and do that, because, and hopefully it'll have a huge audience, because there are moments in this film, one at a party, and I think one after he gives a speech at a bar late in the film, that I think are going to warrant huge applause from the audience, as we saw a little bit of that at the festival.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So yeah, highly recommend it. Lucky.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just going to sound like a broken record here, but this is absolutely one of the best movies of the year, one of the very, very best movies of the year. And for anybody who is a Harry Dean Stanton fan, I mean, this is like the culmination. This is it. I don't think we can emphasize that more. You know, Harry Dean Stanton, one of my favorite actors of all time, and it was interesting to see this movie while, you know, he was still around, and to have seen it at the festival with John Carroll Lynch and the screenwriters there to talk about, you know, him in the present tense, you know, and what he does and how much of his personal life is in this movie, because they basically took his personal life and kind of put it in this movie and, you know, altered the character for the sake of the screenplay. But the stuff that Harry Dean Stanton does, the stuff that he believes in, or believed in, is on full display in this movie. It is the culmination of one of the greatest actors that's ever lived in 90 minutes, and it's beautiful to watch. He is absolutely amazing to watch. And it's not just, you know, a showcase for Harry Dean Stanton. It is, absolutely, without question, a showcase for Harry Dean Stanton, and maybe the best performance of his career. Certainly a culmination of his entire life is seen right here in the movie. But everybody else in this movie is terrific. All of the characters in the bar are memorable. You know, you guys talking about David Lynch. David Lynch is amazing in the movie, and Colin, I'm with you. The monologue that he has about Theodore Roosevelt is beautiful. You know, the scene between Tom Skerritt and Harry Dean Stanton is a wonderful scene. You know, where he allows himself to break this, you know, this routine that he does every single day, and have this moment with this guy. And it's also a nice little alien reunion. Just in that regard, just being a dork, a geek. It was nice to see those two guys back together again. There are wonderful reveals in this movie. You know, he goes through these routines, and you see him go through the routines every day. He walks here, he does that, goes to the bar, watches game shows, which is some of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Oh, he watches game shows like I watch game shows.
Yeah, and he watches game shows, and then he has these wonderful conversations with someone. on the phone. And that adds a real sort of, you know, another level to it. Like, who is he talking to? Is he just kind of talking to himself? What's going on there? And it's never really explained. And there's a great reveal in the movie about he walks past this certain spot on his path every day and he says something. And I can't say it on,
nope.
I can't say it on the air. But when they reveal what it is, it's great. And so wonderful characters, really intimate story, is one of the best, very, very best movies of the year. And if you're a Harry Dean Stanton fan, you can't miss this movie. You can't. It's required. Just one of the best films of the year and one of the greatest final shots ever. And that final shot at the end of the movie has a lot more resonance now, unfortunately, that he's passed away. And so does the entire movie. And I really hope he gets recognized posthumously with at least a nomination for Best Actor, because this is easily one of the best performances of the year, and it's easily one of the best movies of the year. So do you think, Eric, do you think he's going to get a nomination?
I think the voices have to be very loud.
Yeah.
I think that the critics are going to have to pave the way to keep him in the conversation. If he doesn't get the recognition from critics groups, then I think that that movie will be forgotten.
Yeah, that would be a pity. That would be an absolute pity. Anyway, one of the best movies of the year. Go out to the Music Box and see it, and hopefully they will open it a little bit wider. Okay, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to take a break for the news. And when we come back after the news, we are going to talk about Blade Runner 2049 right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to tell a jokey time. We're going to talk about movie theater etiquette and 10 things that actually have a name. You didn't know they had a name. And Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. All right. We are in the middle of the movie reviews, and Colin and Eric are joining me. And then we will also talk about the box office as well. Eric will stick around. We'll talk about the box office. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning for the movie reviews. And we got one really big movie here to talk about left. And welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
All right, Eric. Now, here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much to get. I don't know how much to talk about here with this movie.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. The only thing I knew about this movie going in, other than that it's a sequel to one of my favorite movies that's ever existed on the planet, was from the trailers. Okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I will say this. Within the first 3 minutes of the movie, you pretty much, you know, they reveal something about Ryan Gosling's character that's major.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens within the first 3 minutes of the movie. But I didn't know that. You know what I mean? When I saw the movie, I didn't know that. And I don't know. It's going to be very difficult to talk about we could do the bare bones plot, I guess, without giving that away. But again, the movie delivers that, you know, right at the top of the movie.
Yeah, well, after the first critic screening, or at least the critic screening that I attended, and I'm sure this happened at all of them, we were basically given a list of things directly from Warner Brothers and the director of things not to reveal.
Is that one of them?
Glaringly obvious.
Is that one of them?
The thing that you just brought up is one of them.
Okay.
Even though, like you said, we know this in the first 3 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, it's the first 3 minutes of the movie, but it's not given away in any other way, shape,
correct,
or form. And the thing is, when they reveal it, I was like, oh, because I didn't know that was the case. So, yeah. But again, it's it's such an important part of what the movie is about.
Yeah,
that it's going to be. We're just going to be walking on eggshells here, I think.
Yeah, so I will do my best to reveal the bare bones stuff to get us into the discussion.
Right,
and we'll see how much tap dancing we can do regards to that.
Yeah, yeah, and if it gets a little bit, I might warn people, you know, turn the radio down or fast forward through the podcast at some point if they want to be completely, ultimately, and not know anything going in.
Yeah.
Because we might have to reveal a couple three things. We won't go nuts.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No, if the 3 minutes in the beginning, you know, slip out, so be it.
Yeah.
But I know my ground.
All right.
Okay.
Well.
So let's try this.
All right.
Blade Runner 2049 takes place 30 years after the events of the original Blade Runner from Ridley Scott's seminal science fiction masterwork. So 30 years after the events of that film, We are told that the old Nexus replicants are still being hunted down. They've kind of scattered throughout, different places, gone to their separate corners, gone into hiding, and living their own lives, basically. But the new Tyrell, basically, the guy that eventually sort of took over the Tyrell Corporation, is played by Jared Leto, and is developing a brand new line of Nexus replicants, has interests in some of these old models. Ryan Gosling is a Blade Runner. And as the movie opens, he is hunting down one of these old Nexus robots
The Nexus robots that they're talking about in the movie didn't exist in the original.
Correct.
They're the Nexus 8.
Nexus 8.
Because in Blade Runner, I'm such a geek. In Blade Runner, they're Nexus 6.
Nexus 6.
And they have a 4-year lifespan.
Right.
And the Nexus 8, which I guess were created in between the time, or they were secretly created by Tyrell.
Well, I think here we go.
Yeah.
I think the Nexus 8,
yeah,
I think you can
exist.
Make a
yeah.
case
yeah,
for
did.
At least two characters from the original movie.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The thing about Nexus 8 is that they don't have a lifespan. There's no.
Right.
There's,
and so, depending on yeah. which version of Blade Runner you see, of course, it was special.
this is going to be so much fun.
So much fun.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So as Ryan Gosling's Blade Runner is hunting down the Nexus 8, they discover something is buried on the property of one of these replicants that leads them into a new mystery. A mystery, once again, that is leads them to information at the new Tyrell Corporation. You know, I keep calling it the Tyrell Corporation.
It's Wallace.
No, it's not.
Wallace.
Wallace?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jared Leto's character.
Right.
And he has a vested interest in what they find. The cops, the Blade Runner unit, now headed by Robin Wright, is also very cautious about what they might find or what Gosling's character might find as a result of this. And this leads everyone down another mysterious, a greater mysterious rabbit hole that will connect events from the first film in ways that are not entirely expected. And this is about as far as we want to go with the plot of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Does involve, and Rick Deckard does come back. Everybody knows that.
Well, Harrison.
Yes.
One of the things we weren't told is to not say Harrison Ford is in the movie.
What?
Everyone knows.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
No, we were told not to reveal Ryan Gosling's in the movie.
God, okay.
Harrison Ford,
right.
Everyone's fine with.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Okay. So I think we were probably all very skeptical as to what a new Blade Runner movie was going to be. Been talked about for many years, now decades even. Ridley Scott was going to be involved to direct at one point. He eventually subsided and decided to put that energy into more Alien movies that we didn't need. Doing Blade Runner movies as disguised as Alien movies, basically.
Yeah.
And it was taken over by Denis Villeneuve, who has done Arrival and Sicario and Prisoners. Which made me even more skeptical because I am not the biggest fan of his work, particularly his endings. So I went into this movie with an equal amount of skepticism and excitement because it was a new Blade Runner movie, which I had been waiting in some ways 35 years for, but not really sure if I needed or wanted one at the same time. And from the moment this movie starts, and the sound design, the art direction, the special effects, Roger Deakins' unbelievable cinematography.
Listen, if he doesn't get an Oscar for this, he's never. I mean, it's just
no.
It's
just shut it down.
It's
ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's the most beautifully photographed movie of the year.
Yeah, it is just hypnotizing in the way that you view this movie. And. And then the storyline, which we can't talk too much about, I think expands on many of the themes from the original movie, introduces some new ones to chew on. A lot of people were skeptical about the length of this movie. This movie runs 163 minutes. To me, I never felt that length because I was just so enthralled with whether it be the visuals or the storyline, which I was very much involved in, and not so much trying to piece everything together, although that's part of it, but piecing together again the themes. Ryan Gosling's relationship with a character played by Ana de Armas, the detail of which we were told not to reveal. Yes. So thanks, Warner Brothers. We're trying to discuss your movie, but we can't. And I think that leads to some very interesting ideas about love and relationships. And on top of that, even though this you wouldn't call either of these movies, action oriented at all, but both movies, when presented with the opportunity to have action sequences or suspense sequences, do tend to deliver. And there's some really terrific moments, even though they might be a little quick for some people's taste. Really terrific moments, action beats, and things that happen in this film that I think work really well. Ryan Gosling is great in this movie. He is absolutely great. Just further proof that he's one of the greats right now. That he can hold an audience's attention, and again with a minimal amount of emotion in this film. Again, things we can't talk about. There's absolutely reasons for that. And I think that this movie leads up to emotional conclusions by the end. I think the mystery is very satisfying. I wish that even the third act would be stretched out maybe just a little bit. That's one of my kind of minor gripes with the film, because it just seemed like we got there and it was like, oh, we're going to end this now. Okay. But so much about this movie just had me in its grips, and it's a film that I can't wait to see again because I want to, again, chew on those ideas in the very way that I've been chewing on all the Blade Runner mystique for the last 35 years and can just continually love to revisit time and time again. 82 gave us one of the most seminal science fiction films that's ever been made. I think that this is a worthy follow-up to that film.
Okay. All right. Hang on a second, okay? Colin and Eric are here. Eric just gave a rave to Blade Runner 2049. We'll find out what Colin thought of it and what I thought of it as well after we take a break. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you, everybody? Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell the jokey time. And we're going to talk about movie theater etiquette and 10 things that you didn't think had a name, but they do. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. And Facebook, best way to stay connected, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Before the break, Eric told us all about and gave us his thoughts on Blade Runner 2049. And let's welcome everybody back. Eric, welcome back. Are you there, Eric?
Yeah, hello.
Okay, there you go. All right. Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. So, Colin, where do you stand on Blade Runner 2049?
Well, I'm probably the odd man out in terms of, my appreciation or fandom of the original Blade Runner. The original Blade Runner, I always had a hard time really connecting with for at least a couple decades, where I'd watch it every about 5 years just to see if maybe I would, just like it more. And it never really clicked with me. I always respected it or admired it from afar, respected its place in film history. I knew what it had accomplished on a technical level, and, there's no denying any of that. But as far as, futuristic movies from the 80s that had a lasting influence on the film culture or film language, Terry Gilliam's Brazil had much more of an effect on me than Blade Runner did. It wasn't until I saw it in 2007 on the big screen during one of its anniversary releases where it really did click with me, and I really did enjoy watching it and got felt myself involved with the story. So maybe that's the key. Maybe just seeing it on the big screen is the way to go. So I'm coming into this movie more of a fan, of the director, especially after last year with Arrival, than as somebody who geeks out over the original Blade Runner. So I came into this movie with, I think, reasonable expectations, and you know, I was very pleased with the result. This is a, like you said, a very beautiful film. It's probably, you know, the one of the best art house releases from a major studio that we've seen this year. Kind of like Mother, actually.
Yeah.
There is a real sophistication to this movie that is, it's a movie that warrants repeat viewings, not just for, you know, just going back and seeing the story play out again, knowing what you know now, but just in terms of the philosophies that are being brought into the fray. The themes that are in this movie that really expand on the original. And we've seen, like I said, Blade Runner is one of the most influential films of all time. And we've seen countless knockoffs and wannabes and or movies that are, you know, tried to emulate what the original Blade Runner does. And some of those movies have been successful, but a lot of them haven't been. And this is a movie that could have easily just been two and a half hours of fan service. And it doesn't feel like that at all. It's a movie made by people who really got something out of the original and who really have a deep connection with it and who really want to continue the conversation. And while also not just inhabiting the original Blade Runner universe, but really expanding it and really, really giving it a new life. There's a moment involving one of the holograms on the big cityscapes that was, I thought, tremendously, just a really unexpected moment in the film. And I'm not going to say what it is or give it away, but it was a scene that really moved me and really stuck with me when it was over. And there were moments like that I just wasn't expecting. And yeah, like I said, like Eric said, Ryan Gosling is amazing in this movie. And we've seen Ryan Gosling do the thing, do his kind of stoic, almost wordless, brooding thing before, particularly in Drive, which I thought was an okay movie. And I thought that performance really didn't suit that story as well. But I think that in this movie, he does it with much greater depth and much greater interest, I think, in the character. Yeah, no, this is a really tremendous and beautiful science fiction film for people who are interested in being challenged by science fiction and who really want to, you know, had something to talk about on the way home. This is definitely a movie I recommend.
Okay. We got a break here. Hang on, guys. I'll tell you what I thought of the movie, and then we'll talk about how it did at the box office. Eric and Colin both highly recommend Blade Runner 2049. We're going to take a break for the news here. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of it, and then we'll jump into the box office right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, we're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday. My dad's going to call in and tell a jokey time. And we are wrapping up our movie reviews. Eric and Colin both gave rave reviews to Blade Runner 2049. Let's welcome them back. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
Okay, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I absolutely was blown away by this movie, and I am a massive fan of the original Blade Runner. You know, I'm lucky enough to have seen it on the big screen many, many times, and you know, there are four different cuts of the original Blade Runner, and I still have a soft spot in my heart for the first one, for the 1982 theatrical release with the terrible voiceover that's unnecessary, but I still have a soft spot because that's the one I watched when I was a teenager, you know what I mean? Over and over again. I saw it in the theater a bunch of times, saw it on VHS a bunch of times. The 92 release without the voiceover is much better. And then the European release with all the extra violence is a little weird. But the release, the 2007 release of the final cut of Blade Runner is the one to see. And that's what this sequel is based on. It's based on that. It's based on that movie. That's the sequel to which you should base on. So I have been a massive fan of Blade Runner, the universe, everything about the visuals. It is still, to this day, I mean, I watched it over the weekend, you know, again for the 9,000th time, and it's still astonishing to watch. I mean, you know, the special effects hold up. It still looks better. I mean, it still looks amazing. And the movie came out in 1982, and it looks as good as anything that's made now. It's really it's still an astonishing piece of special effects and photography and everything about it. So I'm a huge fan of it. And it takes the themes from the original Blade Runner, and this movie expands upon them massively. This is a deeply significant piece of work, and a movie about themes that are fascinating, that are important, and it's really amazing how much of, and we all know, you know, Blade Runner lore, that Rutger Hauer came up with that Tears in the Rain monologue. And it's amazing how much of that monologue is what this movie's about, which is kind of astonishing to me, considering that, like, Rutger Hauer kind of, you know, he made that monologue up. But that's the jumping off point of what he was saying is what this movie is really about. Now, it's tough to talk about specifics, obviously, because we don't want to give anything away. You guys have mentioned Ryan Gosling is amazing in the movie. It is an unbelievable performance. Harrison Ford is great in it, too. In fact, everybody's great. Jared Leto is really creepy. In it, and it was nice to see Edward James Olmos, and nice to see Gaff again, you know. But this movie really takes off to another level, and visually, and the score. Did you guys see it in IMAX?
No.
Okay, I saw it in IMAX, and I would recommend your second viewing in IMAX. And because I will be seeing this movie several more times. And like you guys, the length didn't bother me at all. I was hook, line, and sinker from the first shot of this movie to the end. I found, you know, the mystery itself to be, you know, really beautifully executed. You know, I thought I was a couple of steps ahead of the characters at times, but then something else happened to make that change. There are great reveals in it. Some of the action sequences are great. The climax is terrifying. And I, you know, I cared a lot about what was happening to these characters. And I really, you know, can't say enough about Gosling in this movie. It is a tremendous performance, and it is not a showy performance at all. It's a juicy role. There's no question about it, but it's one of these roles where he's got to do the stoic thing. And, you know, any other actor, a lot of other actors wouldn't be able to pull off what he pulls off in this movie, with the enormous amount of subtlety that's involved in how he has to play this character. And I love the stuff between him and Harrison Ford. I just thought that was wonderful. So, you know, without giving anything away, you know, I think this movie takes the themes of the original Blade Runner and expands upon them. And there's a lot going on in this movie, and there's a lot to think about. And I do want to say this. If you're going in to see this movie, and you haven't seen Blade Runner Final Cut ever or in a long, long time, I think you should watch it, because they drive, you know, listen, I think you have to have previous knowledge of Blade Runner. Otherwise, you're going to be completely lost. You know what I mean? Because they drop you in, right? You know, head
100%.
You know, because my dad fell asleep. He was like after 20 minutes, my dad was like, I have no idea what's going on. You know, because I don't think he likes Blade Runner, but he hasn't seen it since it came out. And my dad, this movie was, my dad was lost, and it was like, and then he figures it was 2 hours and 45 minutes, so he's going to take a little nap. But it was an IMAX, so he kept waking up. But I really do think that you can't go in cold and not having seen Blade Runner, or not having seen Blade Runner in a really, really long time, because you will be going, what? I think. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially the more reveals that, I mean, because once Harrison Ford shows up in the movie,
yeah,
I mean, there's the connections are kind of just never ending.
Yeah,
by that point,
and Harrison Ford doesn't show up. He's late in the movie. It's about almost 2 hours before he shows up.
It's a good hour and a half at least.
Yeah, at least before he shows up. And by that point, so much stuff has been connected and revealed, and it's a very complicated movie, both in terms of structure, in terms of what the mystery is, and in terms of theme. You know, and Colin, like you said, this is an art house film, man. And it's a 2-hour and 45-minute art house film that happens to be executed with great depth and, the incredible special effects. At Roger Deakins, like we said, he better win the Academy Award for this. I mean, I mean, it is an incredibly visually beautiful film. And if you can see it in IMAX, see it in IMAX. I would love to have a conversation on more specific things about this movie, about things that I really loved about it, and in terms of what the themes are and, you know, and all that other stuff. There's a lot to chew on in this movie. There's a lot going on. And I, you know, after I saw the movie, I was thinking about it. I've been thinking about it all weekend. And it's still staying with me, and I want to go back and see it again. I think it's a great movie and a worthy successor to one of the greatest science fiction movies ever made. And I think it can be held in the same regard as the original Blade Runner. It's that good. And Denis Villeneuve, for me, I'm a big fan. I know, Colin, you're a big fan of his as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the guy's a great filmmaker. And with this and Arrival, I mean, he also can handle the sci-fi really well. So, anyway, it's a great movie. That's it. Okay. What do we got next week? We got the Florida Project with Willem Dafoe, correct?
Mm-hmm.
The Foreigner with Jackie Chan. How old is Jackie Chan? He's like in his 60s, right? And he's still
86, I think.
He's 86. And he's still kicking people in the mouth. I'm excited about that. We've got Marshall. We've got the Meyerowitz stories. And we've got Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women, and we've got that movie where Vince Vaughn is bald and he's punching people.
And the Groundhog Day horror movie.
The Groundhog Day horror movie, Happy Death Day. But the brawl in Cell Block 99 is the one that I was referring to with Vince Vaughn. See, here's the reason why I'm excited about that. That's the Bone Tomahawk director.
That's right.
So, right there.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right. Well, Colin, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk to you. And happy birthday again, buddy.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you go. Colin, we'll be back next week. And Eric, we're going to dive into the box office.
Yeah.
And all right, so they've used the word bomb to describe the money that Blade Runner 2049 made. It made $31.5 million. I expected it to make around that. That's what I would have predicted.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that drives me nuts. You know, when you talk about box office and you see how it gets reported sometimes. The difference between what a lot of the tracking companies and the so-called experts were saying Blade Runner was going to make this movie, which is basically somewhere in like the mid-40s, okay? You know, other than, you know, the studio's bottom line, there really isn't a much of a difference between a mid-40s opening for Blade Runner and the $31.5 million that it opened to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's still, depending on whose budget you believe, it's somewhere between $150 and $185 million film.
Yeah.
So for a mid-40s opening is not a great opening for a film like that. I mean, it's a very respectable opening for any film.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're talking about dollars to donuts, at least $150 million budgeted film, you're talking about $450 million worldwide before this thing breaks even. Now, you know, Warner Brothers will probably, you know, a studio can release a film like this and maybe lose a little bit of money. I mean, they lost money on Mad Max, mm-hmm. Let's not forget.
Wow, yeah.
You know, and, you know, I mean, probably over time they've now made money now, but theatrically they had lost money.
Yeah.
But I'm sure by the time the Oscars rolled around and they saw the critical response to it, that they were, you know, like, oh, we'll lose a few million dollars on that movie if it's going to be lasting for this long. And I think that's going to be the case with Blade Runner too. Now it might lose a bit more. It's made like another 50 million overseas, but I mean, this movie's most likely not going to make 100 million in the U.S. Now,
yeah.
It's probably going to drop huge next week. I mentioned earlier, you'd be surprised how many people have not seen the original Blade Runner.
Yeah.
At this point, I mean, people that, you know, I've talked to that you just naturally assume would have seen it. Just like, I don't remember seeing that movie actually.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of people like that.
Yeah.
The
other thing to remember, and this is, I mean, obviously, Blade Runner tanked when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it tanked. And the critics were not real kind to it, man. I remember Siskel's review was he loved the art direction, hated everything else.
Yeah.
I think that was a kind of a consistent thing. People were like, oh, the special effects are great. But it didn't make any money. I mean, it was a huge bomb when it came out.
Well, yeah, huge bomb compared, you know, that summer. I mean, I remember that it opened on the same day as John Carpenter's The Thing.
Right.
as well. I mean, for God's sakes, what an opening weekend that is.
Yeah, and that one tanked, too.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
it was the summer of E.T.
Exactly.
Officer and a Gentleman. Poltergeist.
Yeah. And Officer and a Gentleman was all happy. They were all, like, very light, happy movies.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got a movie like Blade Runner and a movie like
one of the most nihilistic science fiction movies like ever.
Exactly.
So it completely makes sense. And, you know, I mean, maybe the length turned people off to this,
yeah.
You know, but I think that it's irresponsible for people to, you know, to throw, you know, the word bomb around because they screwed up.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel about it. It's just like, you know, when it was mid-40s, no one was using the word bomb,
yeah.
Even though technically it's probably going to be a loser.
Yeah.
But when all of a sudden it didn't live up to their expectations, and all of a sudden, bomb!
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which I think is, I just find that very irresponsible.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I wish more people would have seen it, but I can understand why people, stayed away, I guess. I think the Blade Runner Brethren came out.
I think that's absolutely the case. And, you know, I mean, Ryan Gosling, you know, I mean, he was in La La Land and whatnot, but
yeah.
That became its own phenomenon and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, well, you know, just keep preaching the word.
Yeah.
Tell people to see it. It needs to be seen in the theater.
It needs to be seen on the big screen, preferably in IMAX. It's absolutely a great film, an absolutely great film. Okay. Number two, The Mountain Between Us with 10.1 million. That's not good.
No. Again, I mean, we're not talking Blade Runner numbers here, but, you know, I mean, it's still a $35 million production. Don't see a lot of overseas money coming in for this one. So I think this one's going to probably disappear pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it'll just be, you know, one of these kind of like, you know, minor write-offs for Fox, just, you know, easily forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nobody expected this thing to do any business.
No, it actually did more than I thought it was going to do, frankly.
Right. Okay. Number three is It, this thing.
Oh, boy.
Man, oh, man. $9.6 million for It.
It's crossed the $300 million mark in the U.S., and it's over $600 million worldwide.
Man. That's,
I mean, on the same amount of money, from what I understand, it costs to make The Mountain Between Us.
Wow, man. That's amazing. Yeah. That is absolutely amazing. And have you seen it yet?
No.
Oh, man.
I still have to catch up with it.
Everybody else has seen it 5-6 times. And,
yeah, exactly.
All right. Number four, My Little Pony, the movie. I'm glad that they said it was the movie as opposed to, I don't know,
right.
The Happy Meal.
Well, I guess they had it separated from the 1986 version
of right.
it. I don't know. I thought it was called My Little Pony, the movie.
I think it was.
Back then, yeah.
$8.8 million. Did the bronies come out for this one?
I think they're the only ones that came out for this one. I mean, I know the My Little Pony brand is still out there and whatnot. I don't know, you know, exactly. I mean, the bronies maybe pay more attention to it, which is really just every time I say it, I get creeped out.
It's very weird.
I mean, Lionsgate was clearly hoping for some make another franchise out of this.
Yeah.
No.
All right. And then
it's done.
All right. Well, I'm looking at next week. I don't see anything that, I mean, do you think The Foreigner is going to be number one?
No, I think Happy Death Day.
All right.
Yeah. That's a very easy premise to sell.
Yeah.
And we're in October.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is out there, but it's finishing, you know, people have seen it by now, except me. And I think that, I think it's going to be a pretty easy number one, actually.
Okay, Happy Death Day. Okay, well, we'll talk about that next week. Eric, thanks, man.
Sure thing.
Always a pleasure. Eric will be back with us. Colin will be back with us next week for all the Monday morning movie reviews and box office.